The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, happy new Premier League season. With a new top flight campaign ready to begin, we've got 1 hour to preview the lot. Let's hope we don't blow it on Ashley Young stats, chat about Bananarama, and what was number one last time Luton played Brighton in the top flight. From the highfalutin to the Luton, it is our Rootin' Tootin' season preview on the Totally Football Show. Hey, listener. Thank you so much for joining us. Thursday, 10th of August for us here in the Totally Football Show studio. Happy new Premier League season, everybody. Woohoo!
Woo!
There you go. Duncan Alexander's here. All right, Duncan.
Hello.
Nice to see you. Adrian Clark is back as well. Adrian.
Hi.
Hello, yeah, Adrian.
Exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. 100%. Here's a fellow who's excited. Tim Spears. Tim, call me Ryan Mason Spears.
That's it. Back again for another Spurs stint.
Last season, you had to give up your Wolves job to cover for someone on paternity leave and do Spurs, and then you went back to Wolves, and then what happened?
So this week, Steve Madeley, the Wolves reporter's been on holiday.
Okay, has it been a big week with Wolves?
Nothing much has happened, just been sort of filling in, writing a few bits here and there. And then Charlie Eccleshare, fellow Spurs writer, is also off this week. Again, not much happening. So
Well, you say that because this morning, actually, Tim, you were due to be recording The View from the Lane, the acclaimed Tottenham Hotspur podcast.
Award-winning.
Okay, yeah, fair. But I understand the recording's been delayed. Is there some particular big bit of breaking news that you've delayed it for?
Yes, so Mr. Ornstein on top of this as ever, and apparently a bid has finally been accepted after months of wrangling and posturing and negotiations, and it seems Spurs have accepted Bayern's bid of around 100 million.
For Harry Kane. So what's left to be done?
So as we speak, the ball is in Kane's hands, very much so. And he now has his big decision to make, which is going to be really interesting. I mean, normally when these things are obviously spoken about in advance, personal terms are always agreed in advance. He's been speaking to Bayern, for some time. So you'd expect it to happen very quickly if he's fully on board with going to Bayern. However, there are more considerations than that. He set a deadline of the start of the season for this to be resolved. It's now Thursday morning. It's very close to the line. So I've never been fully convinced that he's dead set on just going to Bayern Munich. And, are there negotiation tactics at play here? Because obviously this isn't just a story for this summer. It's already a story for next summer, because that's when Kane's contract expires. So, today's the day when we'll find out either way, I think, what finally is going to happen.
Wow. Will the North London derby no longer feature its top scorer?
It's very interesting that they've accepted, the bid, again, at this late stage, with the season due to start in 2 days, because he's obviously the heartbeat of this team, the goal scorer. He's everything to them. He scored four against Shakhtar last weekend, and Spurs look fantastic, and they're looking really good under Ange Postecoglou.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's a bit like, how sometimes when you're going for a haircut and you wake up that day and your hair's really good and you're like, oh, I don't actually need one. It's like Kane has waited so long in some respects to get a chance to leave, and now Spurs are looking pretty adventurous with new manager, new style of play, and you do wonder whether that'll be playing on his mind.
But Duncan, have you ever then not got that haircut and regretted it the next day? Maybe that's what Spurs are thinking.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Well, much more about Harry Kane and decisions and what this means for Spurs in The View from the Lane, when you actually get around to recording that, Tim.
Obviously, yeah. A very fast developing, moving situation. Whoa. But we'll see what happens later today.
I wonder whether Spurs will replace him. Spend the money on a striker or invest in elsewhere, because they've got good forwards that have that have sort of been on the sideline in Kane's shadow.
Who's that? Richarlison?
Yeah.
Okay. Who really fits into the kind of football that Postecoglou plays, right? And again, he's had a good pre-season, and he's Brazil's number nine, for goodness sake. So there aren't an abundance of prolific strikers out there, as clubs have found this summer. I always thought that if they sold Kane, they'd spend the money on defenders, that's what they really need. Well, they spent £40 million on a defender this week. And the squad looks pretty good, to be honest. You know, they've filled areas that they were lacking in. And they look really set for the start of the season and in a really good position.
Yeah,
good, so Kane leaving now just changes everything.
They could offer Juve a bunch of cash for Dusan Vlahovic if they felt that was a good idea. But yeah, I mean, obviously there's other names out there. There's other names out there. All right, oh, Tim, you're also hosting these days the brand new and very exciting Daily Football Briefing podcast for The Athletic.
Good show, really good show.
I mean, I like it.
Yes, despite my involvement, it's a good show. It's like it is exactly what it suggests it is. It's right. About football. It's every day, and it's quite brief.
It is brief.
It's like 10, 15 minutes just on the key news of the day.
News. Have you done one of those today already?
No.
Okay.
No, I just do a couple of days a week, Monday, Tuesday.
Somebody's done it already today. But you know what? They're going to have to throw that out. Make a new one.
Should be hourly.
Should be, really. Yeah. Anyway, brand new Premier League season with all that entails. Let's see. There's been some tweaks. One thing that's the same as last year is, once again, we will have another major international tournament disrupting the campaign midway. This time it's the Africa Cup of Nations, which will have a bearing on things, no doubt, around January time. Also, as has been much discussed, there's going to be more yellow cards and time added on to try and counter dissent and time wasting. Potentially bad news for Villa's Emi Martinez, who was booked 7 times for wasting time last season. That's a lot, Duncan.
Yeah, he came close to Jens Lehmann's seasonal record for yellow cards, which is 8, I think. But we saw it in the EFL last weekend. I think there were loads more bookings for dissent, loads more for time wasting, and players were doing it automatically. The game I watched, I shouldn't have watched it, but it was Wickham lost 3-0 to Wexford, but next to the player basically just kicked the ball a yard away, just before a free kick, like you would just roll the ball away, and the ref was straight out with the yellow card. So I think we'll see that again in the Premier League this weekend.
I was at Cheltenham v Birmingham this week, right behind the fourth official, and I kept my eye on him. And when there was a goal kick or a free kick, say with the goalkeeper, he clearly put the stopwatch on.
Mm.
So it's things like that. You wouldn't consider that time wasting, but I think as many teams that faced Newcastle last season will have found out, Nick Pope in particular was just painful. He was Rafa Nadal-esque in the way that he just took his time over these kicks. And from now on, that's going to be added on, which has to be a positive. Also, when the substitution's made and you get someone on the other side of the pitch just strolls across when they're 1-0 up or whatnot, there's no point in doing that anymore. I don't know what everyone's complaining about. This has got to be a positive, hasn't it?
It'll be like VAR was at the 2018 World Cup, where at first it just caused loads of issues, and then people learn quickly. You do wonder whether fourth officials will get back into that game everyone did as a kid with a stopwatch, we try and end it exactly on 0-0 on the hundredths.
What about Sports Report? That's a key concern of mine. Well, or the alternative, the 5 o'clock. What's just happened? Because every single game is going to be still ongoing, right? TV schedules are going to be...
Well, TV schedules have already been torn up. There's not going to be any more score on BT Sport. There's not going to be any more BT Sport. Instead, we've got a brand new station covering the Premier League. TNT Sports, they're calling it. Do you know, Tim, it is the 7th broadcaster to host Premier League games. Can you name the other 6, any of you?
ESPN.
Is one.
Satanta.
It's 2.
BBC.
3. There you are. That's the horse book hold of this question.
ITV has had it.
Yeah. Amazon.
No, I don't think ITV has
had it. Well, it had the highlights, and it had Match of the Day.
No, yeah, we're talking about live Premier League.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon. BBC that was during the lockdown. You remember when there were like 15 games in a day? Some would be on BBC. May not have been 15. Also changing the TV world. No Martin Tyler. No Martin Tyler, no Jeff Shrees neither, and no more Jeff Stelling on Soccer Saturday. Oh, this will be the first season in Premier League history to feature an Australian manager and a Belgian manager. Never had.
They never said had. It would never happen, but here we are.
They did. Yeah. It's the future. Hey, while we're doing questions, new Bournemouth signing Justin Kluivert will be, when he takes the field, only the 4th player ever to feature in all of Europe's top 5 leagues. Can you name the other 3? Other 3 players who featured in all of the top 5 leagues in Europe?
Jovetic?
Ooh, is correct. Oh, looking for two more.
Played.
Nice.
The only one I know, though.
I'm not even going to think
really?
About it.
Really?
Yeah, it's two.
One's from kind of early, mid-90s. Romanian player.
Dimitrescu?
No, Florin Radicioiu. Oh, well, yeah. And then the other fellow, I don't know if you'll get him, actually. I mean, you will. Christian Poulsen. Christian Poulsen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Right.
Right.
I mean, that's tough. Yeah.
All right. I tell you what, Tim, that didn't light your fire, but how about this as a question? Brighton face Luton this weekend. Last time they faced each other in the top flight was January 1983. Who was number one?
Les Seely.
I've no idea what you're talking about. It's a goalkeeper joke, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. No, no. Number one record in the charts, Adrian? January 1983?
It's got to be
Bananarama,
isn't it?
Ooh. But no.
No, okay.
Right.
Kajagoogoo? There were 80s.
This is great 80s knowledge and pretty relevant period as well. No, it's actually Phil Collins with You Can't Hurry Love. Can't Hurry Love.
You can't, can you?
Bananarama, who you saw playing in a... in a Ford car dealership car park, along with, and this blows my mind, Status Quo.
Not a Ford dealership car park. It was the car show.
Right.
At the XL, yeah, a few years back.
But they erected a stage there in was, the car
was
park.
It was an 80s extravaganza.
And they had Bananarama. Bananarama, and Status Quo.
I can't remember who else was on, Rick the, Astley, on the bill.
100%.
But it was sensational entertainment. Loved it.
All right. Yeah. As is today's podcast. That's enough fun. Let's get on to the proper stuff and the weekend and season in prospect.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Season gets underway Friday night with Burnley Man City, everyone. City looking to become the first English football club ever to win four titles in a row. Could well have a good start here because they've won their last 11 matches against the Clarets by an aggregate score of 40-1. A lot of talk, though, that this Burnley is different. Adrian?
Very different.
Is it?
The polar opposites, in fact, yeah. In the Championship, they had more of the ball than anybody else. 64.6% of it in the Premier League the year before, they had 39%.
Oh, so right.
That's quite a difference.
But didn't this Vincent Kompany Burnley face City last season in the FA Cup?
They did, and I think they'll have learned lessons from that. And they're going to have to adapt. They got annihilated, if truth be told. That said, I remember the game, and they did cause Manchester City quite a few problems going forward. They've got excellent wide players, Burnley. Manuel Benson is one to keep your eye on. Anas Zerouri is another one. They've lost Nathan Teller. But yeah, they're a possession-based side. They're very attack-minded. They'll play City style of football in terms of inverting their fullbacks and whatnot. They're a very attractive team to watch. this is a good one. 10 plus pass sequences. So, you know, stringing 10 or more passes together. In the Premier League, they only did it 112 times in 38 games, which is not very many. In the Championship last year, 744 such passages. So they'll find it harder.
Is it easier to do that in the Championship than the Premier League?
No, I don't think it is because it's... Well, it is if you're a good team.
Right.
But the Championship is rough and tumble. It's players are closing you down for fun. Mm. You've got to be good to be able to knock the ball around, and they are good. Mm. But of course, they're going to have to adapt their game in the Premier League because there are a lot of opponents will have more of the ball than them. They're going to need... other qualities, aren't they? They're going to need a little bit of the old Burnley qualities, especially resilience, to hold these better opponents at bay.
Very good. That's coming up Friday night. That opens proceedings for this brand new season. Then Saturday, the early game is Arsenal Forest, which will be the first game on TNT Sports. Then at 3, you've got Sheffield United, freshly up from the Championship, taking on Crystal Palace. Happy birthday on Wednesday to Roy Hodgson. Bournemouth are up against West Ham. Brighton face another of the new boys, Luton. Everton take on Fulham. And then at tea time, it's Newcastle Villa. On Sunday, Brentford Spurs. A lot of question marks over the visitors there, and Chelsea against Liverpool, who are facing each other off the field as well, as we speak on the transfer market. And Monday, match day one concludes with Man United against Wolves. Oof. There's 20 teams there, 10 games coming up. Rather than slog through all of them, should we agree on the headlines that City are massive favourites and, Luton and Sheffield United are most likely to struggle?
Yeah. I think that's fair, and statistically and and that is probably the case. But I mean, obviously last season none of the promoted teams went down.
Yeah, well,
I do have a sneaking suspicion Luton might adapt quite well to the Premier League.
We'll talk more about Luton. In fact, let's get a round of predictions later on at the end of today's show. But for now, let's, with 20 teams there ready to go, which sides are most interesting to you? Which ones do you have most question marks? Tim, do you want to kick off?
I will just say that the league as a whole, I think, is really interesting. I was trying to predict my 20 earlier, trying to separate the sort of top eight or nine, if you sort of, you know, go with Brighton and Villa sort of being in there, is really, really hard. I think it's absolutely fascinating, to be honest. I think Chelsea and Spurs without Europe will have an edge on others. I think that'll come into play as the season goes. But if you look at what Newcastle and Villa have done in terms of taking last season and strengthening, I think, really well.
Mm.
And you assume, I think, that Brighton will go again and be up there.
Right.
I think it's probably the hardest league to predict in a while.
Villa, I know, particularly interesting. They face Newcastle this weekend. Mm. What is it about them that catches your
just
eye?
Just incredible progress under Unai Emery, isn't it? I mean, this was a team that were fighting relegation when he came in, and they ended up in seventh place, qualifying for Europe, and they've strengthened well, I think, during the summer. So Yuri Tielemans came in. He checked out at Leicester a couple of seasons ago, really, but if he can get back to what he was, that will be a top signing. Pau Torres, a lot of clubs were after him. Excellent ball-playing central defender. And it's not as if they weren't solid enough at the back anyway. I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but in the last 15 games, Villa didn't concede more than one goal in any game. You know, it was remarkable. They kept things very, very tight. They didn't need three or four goals to win matches because they were so stingy at the back. I think Emery's got something good going. What they need is someone else apart from Ollie Watkins to chip in.
Well, could Moussa Diaby be that figure?
He could be. Yeah, he could be. He's had a good pre-season. He's come in and he scored a few goals. He's more of a winger stroke attacking midfielder, isn't he? If he gets double figures in his first Premier League season, he'd have done very well, I think. I still believe with European football now at Villa Park, they could do with another striker just to ease the burden on Ollie Watkins. But yeah, look, we know that Emery will take European football seriously. Mm. That's his thing, isn't it? He's an absolute expert at that. How will they marry that with the league form? Will they continue to make progress? I think Villa, yeah, they've made great strides. Can they go to the next level?
I don't know. Can they, do you think? Go on, make a bold prediction.
I think they've got a more depth now, yes. Yeah. So they're better now than they were at the end of last season on paper.
Right.
Let's see.
All right, we'll get our first look at them away at Newcastle. Sorry, Duncan.
It feels like they played loads of season, Villa and Newcastle, because they drew 3-3 in America, and it was the game where they had like GoPros on a couple of the players.
Did,
and I watched quite a lot of it because it was quite interesting seeing it from that perspective. But yeah, it was quite funny they're playing on the opening day. So not again. Come on, lads.
It was a great game. Villa should have won it. They were by far the better side on the day, but look, it's a pre-season game.
Yeah. Villa haven't won at St James's Park in an actual league game since April 2005, a game that's quite infamous. Can you recall why?
Bowyer and Dyer scrapped it.
Oh, there's a fight going on here between two Newcastle players. Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer are having a fight. Goodness me, what on earth is going on?
What was the backstory to the Dyer and Bowyer?
I think they had an on-pitch argument. And
right.
It was about one not passing to the other, wasn't it, on the day?
Right.
Yeah. I think Dyer didn't pass to Bowyer and got cross. But, I mean, as with on the bench, our new sub for Newcastle that day, James Milner. He's just always there, isn't he? Just always there.
And we'll be there again this time for Brighton. Brighton, who will be kicking off their campaign against newly promoted Luton, who, Duncan, are the team who you have most questions about, or you think are going to be one of the more surprising sides.
I just think it's a nice story. It's interesting. Obviously, I think everyone knows by now, you know, the spatial dimensions of Kenilworth Road and the football pyramid, how it functions.
Mm.
But it is interesting to see them climb that quickly. They are, you know, it's a sort of style of football you don't get that much. You know, we've now got a slick Burnley, as Adrian was saying, but Luton will play pretty long if people do miss that style. They've got two big men up front, Carlton Morris and Eli Adebayo. And I'm just interested to see how they get on, because it's kind of like different ages of little teams getting to the Premier League. If you think back to the start of the Premier League, Swindon came up,
right,
letting 100 goals, got battered. Then you have a sort of Stoke era where they had a gimmick, you know, a towel and a long throw, and that worked. And then you get the Hull and Blackpool era where they sort of come up, they start really well. Mm. Blackpool then fade and get relegated. Hull faded but just survived for another season. But then you think now, you get teams like Brentford that come up, you know, progressive, smart thinking. And, right, and Luton, I mean, they're not as progressive as Brentford in a lot of ways, but I do think people are writing them off a little bit too easily. I mean, Adrian will know, you know, EFL man.
Adrian, you enter Luton through someone's front room. Will they go out through the Premier League's back door?
I suspect they will, because, right, because of the budgets, because of the talent, quite simply. But Rob Edwards is a great manager. I mean, right, he's had two seasons in the Football League,
uh-huh,
promoted both times.
Mm.
I mean,
can he do it again?
That's very good.
Probably not.
I don't think he'll do it this year. One thing I'll say about Luton is that they're used to absorbing pressure.
Right.
Because even in the Championship, even though they were a top team,
yeah,
they didn't have very much of the ball. Like, I think they averaged like 45% or something. Teams had a lot of shots against them. They had to keep a compact shape. So they've had a lot of practice at that. So, and they didn't let in very many open play goals last season, Luton. They were excellent at the back. So, yeah, they're well equipped to handle it. It's just whether the players are good enough ultimately, and that's where I think they might fall down.
Defence was miserly last season. 46 Championship matches, they only conceded 42 goals, but their keeper has now returned to Nottingham Forest, is that right? To the American Horvath. One man who's come in, though, and this is exciting, I challenge you not to be thrilled at the news that Ross Barkley will be turning out for the Hatters.
I am excited about that. And yeah, they've also signed Ryan Giles from Wolves, who was top of the assists league in the Championship last season for Middlesbrough on loan.
Okay.
Very, very speedy left winger / left back.
And they generate most of their chances from crosses. They had the highest XG. Exactly. So he's a perfect signing.
He'll thrive this season. And I think Rob Edwards has gone under the radar a bit. It's all about Luton and Kenilworth Road. But Rob Edwards, as Adrian says, has had a fantastic start to his manager career, almost unparalleled, really. And yeah, he's really come on as a coach in the last few years. He was at Wolves in the FA, and his man management, by all accounts, is excellent. And he's a really good talker. I think people will really warm to him.
Annoyingly handsome as well. He's just got it all. But yeah, look, one thing I really admire about Rob Edwards is that he wants to play progressive passing football. That's his thing. He's managed the England under-16s. He's used to that.
Uh-huh.
But he's inherited a Luton team that have just got some really big guys and that are well suited to a very direct style of play, and he's rolled with it. And I think that's what they have to still do, because there's a temptation. You get to the Premier League and it's like, we've got to be like everyone else. I think they've got to retain their identity.
But that's why I think the comparison between Burnley and Luton is going to be really interesting, because Burnley are the better footballing team, but will that translate to that high division? You could see Luton picking up more points initially, at least.
Some teams are going to hate playing against them, especially at Kenilworth.
This weekend, will Brighton hate hosting the Hatters? Brighton
are good, aren't they? I mean, Brighton.
They've lost one or two players and possibly are in the process of losing one or two more, but they are possibly in the process of making a very impressive new signing in Mohamed Kudus from Ajax.
Very good player. Yeah, I also have been linked with him, and I'd be more than happy if he rocked up at Emirates. So if they get that one over the line, that will be a real sign of the progress that they've made.
Mm.
Yeah, they're an excellent team. I make them heavy favourites to beat Luton on the opening weekend.
All right.
Roberto De Zerbi, I mean, he's the real deal.
Boom. Excellent. Let's hear from Tim about the side that he's most intrigued by next.
Hi everybody, I'm Danny Kelly, host of The Athletic's dedicated Spurs podcast, The View from the Lane. Join me, Charlie Eccleshare, James Moore, Tim Spears and Jack Pitbrook, who promises to be yet another rollercoaster season in N17. Will Ange Postecoglou bring back attacking football to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium? Will Harry Kane be there to take part? Every Monday and Thursday, we'll bring you top analysis from the best journalists in the game, as well as razor-sharp insight, it says here, and of course, all the usual View from the Lane gaffes and gags. Come on, you Spurs.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Tim, we never got on to what's been happening this week at Wolves, but I know you want to talk about West Ham, because they've had an eventful few days, haven't they?
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Well, they're sort of the hardest team to predict in the league, really.
Which one?
West Ham, sorry.
Not Wolves. Wolves you find quite easy at this point?
Yeah, very concerned about Wolves, yeah. It's been a really poor summer for them. You know, no signings up until now. Poor pre-season results. You know, they lost 4-0 to Leverkusen and 3-1 to Rennes in the past couple of weeks. They've lost a couple of important backroom staff members. You know, Mark Warburton left and Paul Nevin, highly regarded coach, gone to join Patrick Vieira at Strasbourg. Obviously, they lost Declan Rice. You know, not just their best player, but their captain, their talisman, their heartbeat, their key to attack and defence. They also lost Lanzini and Scamacca. So the squad's got smaller. You know, they've got Europa League this year. They're in Europe for the third year in a row. So obviously a remarkable achievement. But I guess more importantly than that, and central to that, suggestions of sort of internal strife between David Moyes, and if people don't know, they've brought in a new technical director this summer, Tim Steiden, previously of Leverkusen and Werder Bremen, I think. So him and Moyes are of contrasting philosophies and cultural football beliefs, you'd say.
Sounds like a smart appointment.
Well, that's the thing. I feel a bit sorry for David Moyes, really. So Steiden, in his last two roles in Germany, you know, barely touched the Premier League in terms of his recruitment, and is believed to, you know, favour more of a European or continental approach, whereas Moyes, as we know, traditionally leans on British players and Premier League players. So there's a real clash there.
Right. Looking at the players that they have brought in the last couple of days and are looking to, seems like Moyes has the upper hand. So they've agreed to $30 million fee for Harry Maguire and James Ward-Prowse. Is that over the line now?
So, no. So they've got three deals in the mix, McTominay, Maguire and Edson Alvarez from Ajax. Very experienced Mexico international, 25 years old.
And so he's seen as the Rice replacement, is that right?
I think more of a defensive midfielder rather than Rice sort of playing both roles and getting forward. But yes, essentially he'll take Rice's place in the team.
Okay.
But my God, you know, they needed this week. You know, I think McTominay and Maguire will be good additions. The dressing room will need that. If you look at that squad, there are not many obvious leaders in there. I'd imagine it's David Moyes who's identified those two players for those roles. But when you look at it, you know, Moyes is sort of perennially under pressure. Even if he's winning a European competition, you know, there's still sort of question marks over his job. So bringing in a technical director who's obviously got an extremely important job at the club, I don't know, it just sort of spells danger for me.
The style of football is difficult for a lot of the players to perform to their best. And I mean, you know, you think about the attacking players, Lucas Paqueta has been linked, doesn't he, with Manchester City. Obviously, anyone can get their head turned by Manchester City, but, you know, someone like Jared Bowen, good player, how many touches of the ball does he get? You know what I mean?
Declan Rice joined Arsenal, he went on about how long it's going to take him to assimilate all the stuff he had to
learn. Yeah, exactly. I do think there's a frustration within the dressing room. And look, there was a big drop-off, wasn't there? I think they scored 18 fewer goals. They had 16 less points last season. Even though they won a European trophy, they went backwards quite far.
Right.
I think Moyes has got a lot of work to do this season.
If you lose Declan Rice with everything that he represented for the team and you spend that money on McTominay and Harry Maguire, is that good business?
I mean, both would be good signings, but they're not going to kind of improve West Ham. They're maybe just going to get them another place or two up the table, which is not, you know, they won a European trophy, albeit one of the newer ones, but you do feel like Moyes, he might look back and think, I should have maybe gone out on that night. And
yeah, or West Ham might think, you know, like Bournemouth did, you know, should have been maybe braver in hindsight and make that decision in the summer. Because it does feel inevitable.
But it's interesting that they're playing Bournemouth in the opening game, because Bournemouth have brought in Iraola, you know, really progressive manager that a lot of clubs looked at. And they're looking at players like Alex Scott, who has been brilliant in the Championship. And if you had a choice between someone like Alex Scott and Ward-Prowse, I think, you know, I'd go for Scott, you know, more potential, bigger future. James Ward-Prowse is a very good player, but there's probably a reason that he's never got a move before now.
Yeah, they need more of the ball. They need to be more attack-minded, because Rice saved them. Like, he was the legs of the team. He was the engine, the heartbeat. You look at the number, you know the numbers, Duncan. I mean, yeah, they're just extraordinary in terms of the interceptions and the ball-winning qualities. Take that guy out.
Yeah, if you take out,
I don't think you want to be doing too much defending with that guy missing. I think they need to play on the front for this.
I mean, you take out defenders, and Rice carried the ball more than anyone by miles in the Premier League last year. I mean, you could argue that Maguire, one of Maguire's strengths that wasn't used at United recently, is carrying the ball out. So he could possibly do a bit of that. But yeah, Rice is a very difficult player to replace.
Bournemouth, with Andoni Iraola coming in from Rayo Vallecano, a big pressing fan. Across the big five European leagues last season, only Bayern Munich forced more high turnovers that produced a shot than Rayo Vallecano. That's quite a complicated stat, but it says something, Adrian.
He's vertical.
Yeah, he'll get them grafting, won't he? They'll work from the front. Hopefully they'll be a bit more attack-minded as well. Because Gary O'Neill, I felt with Gary O'Neill, he was constantly in a relegation battle, so he had to sort of just dig out results and play very cautiously. Hopefully, because it's a clean slate this year, we'll see a bit more proactiveness from Bournemouth. They did fail to score in almost half their games last year, Bournemouth, which isn't great. Mm. I think that Iraola will get more goals out of them, from turnovers especially.
Gary O'Neill, Tim, is now at Wolves after the upheaval at Molineux this week.
Yeah, what a week. Julen Lopetegui left 6 days before the start of
Wolves'
season. Yeah, he's got form, isn't he? Yeah, so he left Spain on the brink of the World Cup, people may remember, because of his dalliance with Real Madrid. This is not really to do with dalliances with other clubs, although he was looking elsewhere at the start of the summer when I assumed that this, you know, divorce would happen, but it's taken until early August, which is...
Why is that?
So, I mean, it's an unusual one. I mean, it's nothing to do with results. Lopetegui did very well last season. Wolves were pretty much a top 10 team in the form charts, you know, ever since he took over. It's nothing to do with style of football, because that was pretty good on the whole, certainly at home. It's about money, it's about power, and it's come to a head. He's had a massive fallout with the chairman. Their relationship is basically completely broken down. And he feels he's been misled over the amount of money he's got to spend, which is precisely zero. So I don't know why that's a particularly hard figure to get his head around. But Wolves have lost an awful lot of players this summer. They've lost Neves, Moutinho, Jimenez, Traore, Cody. You know, very familiar names in what's been their very successful few years. And they've signed Matt Doherty, again a very familiar name from the past few years, as on a free transfer. And that's it. And from what I'm told, they won't be spending money between now and the end of August, even though there are more departures to come. They've got a huge financial shortfall to make up this summer. They've already sold £85 million worth of players, but that's still not enough.
So why are Wolves, who, I mean, any Premier League sides in the 20 richest clubs in the world, essentially, where the SPL, the Saudi Pro League, maybe changes that, 20 richest European sides, why do they not have a... And they've just received 85 million. Why can't they...
So they spent 170 last year. I think maybe people don't really realise, because a lot of that money went on players that did really not much in
who
the Premier League. So Mateus Nunes came in for about 45 million. Mateus Cunha was a similar price. Gonçalo Guedes was about 27 million. These players did nothing last year. So, they spent under Bruno Lage last summer to get the squad ready. Then when they were bottom of the league, they spent 70 million in January under Lopetegui to go again. And they're going to fall well short of financial fair play rules.
Is it true that Lopetegui knew this was happening a few weeks ago and that he just agreed to stay on to coach the players to get them fit for the season?
It's been coming for a while, but he's on a huge contract and didn't want to walk away from that. He told the club after a friendly against Celtic about 10 days ago that he just couldn't do it anymore and that he was going to go, but he agreed to stay for sort of 7 to 10 days to coach the team while they found his his successor. But yeah, basically he wanted 4 signings, none of which have come in. They were in for Alex Scott, who's going to Bournemouth for around 20 million, but they couldn't afford that. So they're in real trouble.
I think it's a really good point. It's the same as Everton. You think of these clubs as not bringing anyone in, but they actually have spent tons of money, just not very successfully.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, part of me thinks just get on with it and manage the squad and just be a manager. But there was always a feeling, and I really saw this with Conte last season, so I recognised it, that he just thought it was beneath him to be at Wolves. You know, former Spain, Real Madrid and Sevilla manager. And I think he just think, right, I don't need the hassle of no money in another relegation battle.
Right.
So he's decided to go, and yeah, Gary O'Neill's his replacement.
Gary O'Neill, who Adrian, you used to ghostwrite for.
I did, yeah. Yeah, one of my first jobs in sort of football journalism. Yeah, I used to ghostwrite player websites when they were a thing.
Nice.
Back in the early noughties. And he was a youngster at Portsmouth at the time. Very, yeah, he spoke like a veteran even at 20, 21. Like he was, you could just tell someone loves football and they love the game and they can't stop talking about it. I think he probably thought he'd have a career maybe in the media afterwards. He was very good talker, but it's turned out that he's a very smart coach. I think we saw enough from him last season to suggest that Wolves have made a relatively sound choice. I think given the fact that they haven't got much money to spend, he's also a budget choice in terms of wages.
So, and him as a manager will be a budget choice. You know, they spent an awful lot on their last sort of 3 managers.
Exactly. So his wages will be considerably less. And Lopetegui's, but I like him. I think he got a lot of respect for the job he did at Bournemouth. Remember, he's got some ingenious little moves he put together, I think, from set pieces. And obviously the famous kickoff goal against Arsenal, I thought was one of the moments of the season, actually.
Remind me, Adrian.
Well, they scored after, how many seconds was it?
9 or 10?
The second fastest goal in Premier League history.
Uh-huh. And it's Bournemouth that get this match underway. Immediately on the front foot as well. Looking to get off to a bright start. Ball's come in, it's a goal! That goal came really quickly from Philip Billing. Arsenal switched off from the start. What a shock! And Bournemouth are leading.
They basically did a decoy kickoff where they put everybody on the left-hand side and then somebody span round from the centre circle to receive a little touch to then spread the play right for a 1v1 because Arsenal's players had all gathered on the right and they had a 1v1 with Zinchenko, put it into the box and Philip Billing turned the ball into the back of the net. It was genius. And I just think that's a moment that he could feel really proud of. So yeah, Wolves might have a few things up their sleeve this season.
I'm sure he's a very, very good coach and by all accounts a really nice guy. Mm. But as a Wolves fan of many years, you know, going from a former Real Madrid manager to a guy sacked by Bournemouth in June, I think I feel like Duncan did in the 4th minute of, you know, Wickham's opening game of the season. Just all that sort of new season optimism. I mean, mine's gone already, to be honest.
Yeah,
so.
It can go fast, I tell you.
It all begins for Wolves. Monday night, Tim, so you've got until Monday night when they're going to be at Old Trafford facing a Man United team that could be handing debuts to Mason Mount, Onana, Hoyland. No, apparently not Hoyland. He's injured. So there's that. There's that. Okay, next up, let's touch on the big game Sunday afternoon, Chelsea-Liverpool.
Hi, I'm Ayoake Muleri, host of the Athletic Football Podcast. On the latest episode, Tony Evans and Rafa Honingstein join me to take a closer look at how and why Liverpool went from being the best side in the Premier League at signing players to being not so great at the moment. And also, can Jurgen Klopp convince his side to play heavy metal football once again? Available now on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. Just search the Athletic Football Podcast now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Let's dig deep into the mailbag, which features this from Tony Down Under today. Which team do the panel predict will have the most managerial changes during the season?
Well, it's traditional now for at least one club to go through three managers in a season. Sometimes it's Fulham.
Who had the most last year? I feel like it was Chelsea, is that right?
Chelsea, well, Bruno had a game, didn't he? Not really.
Yeah. Southampton had three.
Yeah. I don't know. Obviously last season was a record number of sackings. It feels like it won't be quite as high this season.
I would plump for Nottingham Forest because they've had a bad pre-season. It's not been a lot better than Wolves, really. I know they've got a lot of players, but they haven't spent much and the results have been really poor. And there's obviously speculation over Brendan Johnson's future. I just feel if they get off to a bad start and they've got a really tough fixture list, Nottingham Forest, if they get off to a bad start, I don't think the owner there is the type that to stick with him again. I think he'll pull the plug early and it'll be a mistake to do so. They'll bring in someone random. That will go wrong. And I think they'll go through three managers this season. That's just me.
Okay. Pierre Van Hooijdonk as caretaker to see him through.
Possibly, yeah.
Nice. Tom Bowdery would like to know, he says, who cares about who's going to win the league? I want a little discussion on who will be the entertainers this season. Top three for me, says Tom Bowdery, Liverpool, Bournemouth and Brighton.
I disagree, actually. I think Spurs are going to be incredibly entertaining
in a good sense this time.
I think they'll be comfortably the least recognisable
even if that
from
news,
last season.
Yeah, the biggest change.
Yeah, but even I mean, they haven't really made too many signings, but they're going to look, and they're still wearing the same colour shirt, but they're going to look completely different.
Mm.
It'd be like when a soap opera changes an actor, but it's the same character.
Right. Well, Jeeks of Hazzard did that with.
I mean, Miss Ellie, I think, would be the.
Yeah.
Dallas.
Yeah. Ben Mitchell.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It's going to be like that.
He was pretty bad both times.
But you're right. It's mad how it's very, I mean, I suppose Burnley did it last year, but it's very rare to see a football club change philosophy that much. And it kind of proves the point that I've tried to make to my mum for many years. She's like, what does it matter of who the manager is? The players are the players. It's like, because you can have the same set of players and a different manager and they'll play in a completely different way. So she's wrong.
She like?
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable.
Well, but Chelsea are in a similar boat, aren't they? Mm. Because they were so rank bad, weren't they, towards the end of last season? And they've got this young, vibrant-looking team. It's going to look very different. Mm. A manager that plays front-foot football, doesn't he? Plays attacking football. I think his record at Spurs, his team scored an awful lot of goals, Pochettino. So, and we know that Chelsea didn't score very many. So I think they'll be more entertaining.
And also, Reece James said that Pochettino sat him and a few of the other sort of more senior players down and said, what was the issue? And they were like, we weren't fit enough. And they've spent a lot of time getting fitter. So
really? They didn't just say Frank Lampard.
Well, maybe it was code. But
ketchup.
Yeah, we need more ketchup / less ketchup, the classic yin-yang. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea and Tottenham were two of the most frustrating teams to watch last year because they were just so bad and or dreary. And it's going to be,
Yeah, and like I said earlier, neither of them are in Europe. I mean, even Spurs' pre-season results have been entertaining. They lost 3-2 to West Ham. They beat Shakhtar 5-1, and then they lost 4-2 to Barcelona in the week. But honestly, the yawning gaps at the back are incredible. Even all their defenders like to attack. The two centre backs, Van de Ven and Romero, love to push.
But if you look at yawning gaps, was more the terraces last year. No?
Yeah.
Okay.
But if you look at Postecoglou's career, his first few games at clubs tend to be, they concede a lot of goals because it takes a while for the system to bed in.
Yeah, Brentford, it's not as if they're going to press them when they try and play out from the back at the weekend.
That game could be really good.
Yeah, because Brentford will get after them big time.
That's the early game on Sunday, of course. 2 o'clock.
It is, yeah. Yeah, it should be. We saw what Brentford did to a Manchester United side that wanted to try something new last year, playing out from the back. They absolutely murdered them, didn't they? So be interested to see how Spurs fare against a team that will press like crazy.
Right. The kind of marquee fixture of match day one comes later on Sunday afternoon when Chelsea take on Liverpool. One other post from a listener just to touch on before that. Brian Doyle, he says, can we get word on San Siro not being torn down and the next steps for it? This is back in the news this week because there's been confirmation of the fact that there's essentially protected status now for the building. This has actually been the case for a while because when the kind of cultural minister was appointed after the recent elections, Vittorio Scarabi immediately said, no, this is a protected building. It's a cultural landmark. It's iconic. You can't touch it. Any building over a certain age, you can't redo in Italy, as I guess in most countries. But the fact that they'd redone bits of San Siro had previously allowed the clubs and the council to say, oh, no, we can knock this down. It's a loophole, and they were going for it. But the government have said, no, there's absolutely no way you're touching San Siro. So both clubs are now pressing ahead, and I'm doing big air quotes here, pressing ahead with plans to build their own stadiums, different ones, one slightly to the north of San Siro. The other ones, they're both out of town, essentially, or further out of town. The other one is to the southeast of the city. But I say pressing ahead. Roma have been pressing ahead with their stadium for about 9 years now. You had the pictures 9 years ago, the owner digging the first shovel full of dirt, and nothing.
I mean, Southend United, one of my former clubs, you could probably say 25 years.
25 years
worth of managers have been tempted in by the plans for the new stadium.
Right.
And yeah.
Essentially, anyway, I think that they'll all be playing. San Siro is going to stay there, which, I mean, I personally...
But if neither Milan club is playing there,
I think they will be, because it's going to be flipping ages before either of them.
Maybe Luton could play at San Siro.
Possibly so. Anyway, they'll have to keep it. It will be used. I think it's one of the kind of centrepieces of the upcoming Winter Olympics in 2026, off the top of my head. But beyond that, I mean, the clubs will be playing there for ages. I mean, look for this story to return every season and possibly several times during it.
I had my first visit to San Siro last autumn, and I pulled the handle on to the toilets and the handle came off, so they do need a bit of upkeep. Keep it, sadly.
100% totally falling apart. Same story down in Naples, where De Laurentiis desperately wants to, but you know, as part of the whimsical charm of Serie A. Yes, very good. Women's World Cup quarterfinals Friday, we'll see those begin with Spain against the Netherlands. That's 2 a.m. UK time. Challengingly enough, you'll be catching that over breakfast, Adrian.
Yeah. I won't.
Japan and Sweden is at 8:30 a.m. Saturday, Australia against France, 8 a.m. and then England Colombia at 11:30, which I think slightly overlaps with Arsenal's game against Nottingham Forest. The other games from this weekend in the Premier League are 12:30 Saturday, Arsenal Nottingham Forest. Duncan, you've got a big prediction to make about the Gunners. We'll be hearing that very, very shortly. Sheffield United taking on Crystal Palace. Sheffield United, in their last season at this level, registered the worst start in Premier League history. How long did it take them to win a match?
17.
Sold the two best players as well, Illiman and Jai and Sander Berger. So, yeah, I think it's going to be tough for the Blades this year.
Okay. Everton are hosting Fulham Saturday at 3. 38-year-old Ashley Young possibly making his debut for Everton. He's so not young that he actually played alongside Sean Dyche at Watford 20 years ago. Remarkable. Yeah. Oh, also, Everton have signed Arnaud Danjuma again. Because he was previously going to go for them, but then decided at last minute to join Spurs. but now he's going to Goodison on loan. And did you see he put out a tweet with a little snake emoji?
Yeah, well, he did a little snake arm movement in videos. Yeah, but what is it? Everton and snakes? Obviously, when Marco Silva left Watford together, there was a lot of snake trap.
Yeah, I love the fact that, yeah, he's willing to admit that he was a snake there.
Own it.
It's the social media equivalent of either flying into a tackle on your debut or kissing the badge, because the fans will be like, oh, I hated him, but he actually is good. Yeah. That's that easy.
Fair enough. Chelsea take on Liverpool Sunday at 4:30. The two clubs currently locked in a transfer mano-a-mano.
Winner gets Lavia.
Yeah, for the services of Romeo Lavia out of Southampton. What's the latest there, Tim?
It's edging more towards Chelsea, I think, as we stand. But yeah, that might run until after the weekend, you'd imagine.
Unlikely to be turning out for either of those in that clash.
But Chelsea, again, are sort of going down the Football Manager style of just putting in bids for players, Caicedo, Tyler Adams, and now Lavia.
Filtered by Determination 17.
Yeah, exactly. But as Adrian says, you know, I think they've had a really good pre-season. By all accounts, they've been showing...
Chelsea.
They've been showing more intensity in friendly matches than they did in the whole of last season.
Fun stat, Tim. Pochettino will be the ninth Chelsea manager that Jurgen Klopp has faced in his 8 years as Liverpool manager. Less fun stat is the fact that Christopher Nkunku, who's been part of that positive pre-season for the Blues, is going to be out for 4 months. He requires surgery on that knee injury that he suffered in pre-season against Dortmund. That's a blow.
Because he was going to be a massive player for them. And he will be when he's fully fit, because I think he's at his best attacking midfielder, but he's a very powerful runner, and they don't really have someone of his ilk. Nicholas Jackson is the one that's impressed me in pre-season. I think we've watched the same games, Duncan. I can see you nodding. This guy's quick. He's really sharp, plays off the shoulder of the last defender. So from counter-attacks, Chelsea are going to have this guy that they can just slip balls through over the top for 1v1s. And in those 1v1s, he's pretty lethal. And he ended last season on a real high with Villarreal. His strike rate was incredible, and he's carried on that form into pre-season. So, yeah, Jackson is one to keep an eye on for sure.
And Levi Colwill as well, by all accounts. He's had a great pre-season. I think he's going to be potentially one of the standouts. You can see
he'll play for England soon.
You can see him getting in there pretty quickly, really, actually, with England centre-half options.
Yeah. On the goal front, they got 38 last year.
Chelsea?
Yeah.
38
goals. Their lowest ever in the Premier League. I was looking at what it takes to get in the Champions League and what the minimum requirement has been across the last 10 years, and 58 is the minimum output. So they've got a bit of improvement.
Sorry, Jackson will score 20. 38 out of 20, 58, job done.
Happy days. There you go.
I mean, he has had some injury problems as well, which is not ideal for given Chelsea's other...
They probably need another striker, don't they?
Yeah.
Don't count on too many goals being added in this fixture. The last four meetings of these two sides in all competitions have all finished 0-0, 0-0.
George Valdano on line two.
Exactly. What do you think then? Now, let's get some predictions. Do you think Chelsea are going to make the top four? Who's going to end up in the bottom three? Let's hear your bold calls for the season ahead. Adrian.
Okay. Top four will be Manchester United, Liverpool.
In which order?
Oh, we're going to go from four. Okay. 4-1. Four to one. Manchester United four.
Yes.
Liverpool third. I've got a head and a heart selection here, but my head says Arsenal second and City to win it again.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
They're worthy favourites, but Arsenal can win it.
Do you want to disagree wildly with that? Duncan, you think Arsenal are going to win it?
Yeah, my top six was Arsenal first, Chelsea second.
You're kidding.
Why Chelsea second?
I just believe in Poch.
Incredible.
They underperformed so much last season. That is not a guide to that Chelsea squad.
Compared to the Spurs team that he took to second place, how would you... Is this a better Chelsea side?
Not yet, but I think it's got the potential. Yeah.
So a Chelsea side that scored 38 goals is going to finish ahead of Manchester City.
That's why we love predictions, Adrian. I've got City third, good job. They like the number three. United fourth, Liverpool fifth, Villa sixth.
Tim?
I do think Man City might drop off. I don't know, they showed some weaknesses last season. De Bruyne is 32 now and very injury prone. You say right. him and Haaland and Gundogan were the ones who really kicked them onto the title at the end of last season. Can Haaland do it again? I'm sure he can.
But one in nine he's got. One in his last nine.
In awful form. But I don't know. I think Arsenal got a huge determination and motivation to win this title this year. And I think their recruitment's been really impressive. A lot will depend on Havertz. But I think Timber and Rice are almost guaranteed to do very well if they stay injury free. A lot will depend on how they cope with the Champions League. But I've got them down to tip City. I think most people do.
Oh, you have Arsenal.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just want that to happen. Yeah. So you right. just naturally all, sort of... Yeah.
It'd be good
so.
For the league.
Well, look, no team in the history of English football has ever won four titles in a row. It's one of the unbreakable things of English football. So there's been numerous times when teams have done three, and I'm pretty sure if there had been podcasts then in the 1920s with Huddersfield, they'd have been saying they're going to win it again, but they didn't. So, everyone was saying Haaland, think how good it'll be in his second season, but it doesn't always work like that. You know, Mo Salah's best goal season was his first season at Liverpool, and you know, players do get worked out.
Yeah, I predict he'll get injured. You rarely hear injury predictions, but I think Haaland will miss a chunk of the season through.
Injury. Boom! I was going to come on to injury predictions next. Thanks, Tim. Who's your top four then?
I think.
Is this in reverse order?
Yeah, I'm going to count down. Chelsea fourth. I think No Europe will be a big factor, and they've finally got a good manager. And there's no doubt of the quality that they've got in their squad. I think he'll bring it together. I think Liverpool third, and then City second, and Arsenal first. I think United will drop down. I just can't quite see Rashford having the same impact in terms of goals this season, and I don't think Hoyland's going to make up that shortfall. So, I think United will drop down to fifth.
None of you have mentioned Newcastle United in your top four.
Mm. It's a difficult one to predict, isn't it? Champions League will be a distraction for sure, but they've recruited really well. I just think that they overperformed a lot of times last season. So,
I've got them seventh. I just think Champions League plus trying to equal that last season is going to be tough.
Particularly the defensive record from last season. I'm not sure they can make
it. They need to get the balance right, don't they, with Isak and Wilson. I think he wants to play them both in the same team, but I think they're a better team when it's one or the other. And defensively, it's just remarkable what they achieved last year. In open play, conceded fewer than anyone else. Can we see that replicated? I'm not sure.
Mm. What about who's going down then?
I think everyone will say Sheffield United.
I got them bottom.
Yeah, they'll be bottom.
I've also got Forest.
Uh-huh. Forest?
Well, they don't score goals. And yeah, I think Adrian's right in terms of managerial departures. And Everton.
Really? Not Wolves?
Honestly, don't know. I don't know.
Don't make him say that.
No. Do you know what? I did have them in originally, but I just think they've got better squads than the teams around them, and that will hopefully prevail. Not necessarily under Gary O'Neill for the whole season, but I think they will stay up.
Forest, Luton, and Sheffield United, but Luton could easily swap out Luton for Wolves. I think the Wolves
not
will,
Everton.
Will struggle. Everton always scrape out of it, don't they? So
I've got Everton, Wolves, and Sheffield United.
Why are you sitting down on Everton?
Because the last two seasons they've escaped on the very end, and they haven't really brought many players in. You know, people talk about Sean Dyche's ability to keep teams up, but he took Burnley down. So obviously next season they could be moving into the new stadium, which would be bad timing if nothing else. But
it's a strong narrative, isn't it, going down ahead of the new stadium? Mm. Yeah, you can see that being quite the story.
You touched on Fulham earlier, I think. Marco Silva and Mitrovic were the two key reasons why they did so well last year, and they've both been very strongly linked with moves away this summer. So will those happen? How much does that unsettle them? Can Mitrovic score those many goals again? Teams will know how to play against them better now.
Yeah, I think they're really well coached by Silva. When I see them, I think they're a good team most of the times when I watch Fulham. But if they lost Silva, that would be the game changer. I think they'll find a way to cope without Mitrovic, to just reinvent themselves. But yeah, Silva's the key.
All right. Big question marks. Big question marks, which week by week we will see answered as the Premier League story unfolds. We'll be here, of course. Listener, perhaps you'll be joining us every Monday and Thursday to chronicle all the events. This coming Tuesday, we'll also be dusting off our European edition too with Rafa, Jules, Alvaro, and James Horncastle. So why not join us for that? But next up for us, Monday, we'll be rounding up all the action that actually takes place, which will be nice. And producer Charlie points out, this Monday, we should be with you extra early, kind of first thing on Monday, depending on your time zone. So look out for that. For now, though, it's many, many thanks to Tim, to Duncan, to Adrian, to producer Charlie, and you at home. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you afterwards.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.